Robert Stockwell himself here, but as well we have some practitioners of signal and image processing who are using this S-transform in various contexts, whether it be with atmospheric data or medical imaging or seismic imaging. And there's a great deal of activity, and what I want to try to do is put the S-transform in a mathematical context without bombarding you with horrendous numbers of formulas. And basically, to put it in, the Shakespearean language, as the Danish mathematician Hamlet might ask, to be or not to be a wavelet, that is the question. So I want to look at the S-transform and see how it relates to wavelet theory and see if there's something that wavelet theory can get from the S-transform and maybe the S-transform can get from wavelet theory. Okay, well, this slide, I hope you can read that table. So I've tried to put all of the mathematics of signal processing in the first half of this overhead, so I should take a few minutes to talk about this. So this is really the framework in which I want to discuss things. So here I have a little table, and I've got three categories here: continuous transforms, discrete transforms, and finite transforms. So roughly speaking, these range from mathematical analysis to algorithms and computer implementation. Maybe these words are slightly misleading. What I mean by discrete transform is, in the context of Fourier analysis, what would correspond to Fourier series, where you have a discrete set of functions, so sines or cosines or characteristic functions, exponentials, in terms of which you represent a given signal. In the finite level, we have discrete Fourier transform, which has the miraculous implementation of the fast Fourier transform, which is a particular algorithm. Okay, so in these three columns, roughly from left to right, is sort of order of historical development. Fourier analysis came first, and then wavelet analysis had a huge burst of activity in the 80s and 90s, and then Gabor analysis, which dates back to the 40s and 50s, has had a recent resurgence of activity and continues to be a topic of intensive research. Okay, well, the purpose of this chart is to illustrate really what's involved, I think, in broad strokes in the mathematics of signal processing. There's sort of three levels at which we can analyze a signal. I always get after my students for doing that. First we have the sort of continuous context, which is addresses the question, given a signal, what is it you want to represent about that signal? So, for example, the Fourier transform represents spectral content. The wavelet transform represents localized information about scale, so detail on various scales. And the short-time Fourier transform represents local frequency information. So those are all different sorts of things you can represent about a given signal. On the second level, we have the first step towards implementation in terms of doing any sort of data processing, which is to get rid of redundancy. So if we have, for example, a signal which is compactly supported, then there's a certain amount of redundancy in a Fourier transform, and you can get away with Fourier series, which is a discrete representation of the signal. And then similarly, the continuous wavelet transform is enormously redundant. In order to get rid of the redundancy, you want to figure out a good wavelet basis, which is more efficiently representing the signal. And then we have the analogous thing in the Gabor transform. Okay, so there's an enormous amount of mathematics relating, for example, in say, the Gabor transform. in determining frames which eliminate the redundancy to a large extent of the short time Fourier transform and give you a good and useful representation of a signal. And there's been a lot of success in developing wavelet transforms with all sorts of wavelets, compactly supported wavelets, and a great deal is known about how these represent not only signals but also operators. So on this middle level, there's a great deal of mathematical analysis also of the nature of operators, but it's the first step in getting towards implementation, which is where everything is finite. So in the real world of image processing, every time series is finite, and everything is essentially linear algebra, but nevertheless, the structure and ideas coming from the various transform lead to various implementations. And there's been huge success with, of course, the fast Fourier transform, but there's also a fast wavelet transform, which transforms a signal into a discrete wavelet representation. Oops. Okay. In order n operations. Okay, so this is the fast wavelet transform is extremely fast. So this works in order n operations, and there are various schemes to carry out discrete Gabor transforms as well. So Hans Feischinger and many others in Vienna have done a lot of work on Gabor transforms and also discrete implementations of those. All right, well, the S transform is a particular transform, and I think it's fair to say that Robert Stockwell's talk about the S-transform really represents trying to work through these three mathematical stages for the S-transform. So finding a good discrete transform, firstly, and then an appropriate finite scheme to efficiently implement this for large data sets. So I think it seems to me that this is the project which Robert described for the S-transform, and I don't mean these question marks to indicate that nothing's been done. He's clearly done a lot of work in both discrete transforms and then finite implementation, but really I want them to indicate, well, what should be the best discrete transform or the best finite transform? So this is sort of an open question, and I want in this talk to relate this to wavelet analysis. Okay, well, to illustrate things in more concrete terms, here is the continuous wavelet transform. So it takes a function of a single variable x. So this may annoy those who are used to working with time series, but x in this, you can think of as time, maps it to a two-dimensional function via this map. So here you have your function integrated against this wavelet phi, which is scaled by scaling factor a, and translated by x. Okay, so this is the continuous wavelet transform. The usual wavelet transform arises from taking a discrete set of translates x and a discrete set of scales a and implementing this. Then for the fast wavelet transform implements that in the context of finite signal and finite wavelet transform of the same size. Okay, so there's two main characters in our dramatis personae of this. The second main character, and really the one I'm most interested in discussing, is the Stockwell transform. Okay, so I think we've all seen this, but this is the transform S, which maps a signal F to S of F, which is a function of two variables. Okay, so here F is integrated against a Gaussian, which is scaled by Xi and translated by X. And then the Fourier transform is taken of that. Okay, so one thing to point out is that this is clearly a windowed Fourier transform. So the Fourier transform of a windowed version of the function f is multiplied against the translate of g. But the important thing about the S-transform is that this window is scaled according to frequency. So high frequency, for high frequency psi, the window is very narrow. All right, well, there's many ways to look at this. As a windowed Fourier transform is one, and it seems to be the one which drives most of the thinking about it in terms of the practical analysis. But there are other ways to look at it. So we can code up in the usual way this dilation, which is simply this scaling, and then translation and modulation. So these are the familiar operators. So just in terms of this notation, you can write the S transform very neatly as F of modulate of translate of dilate of G, which is Gaussian. All right, now there's something to point out here. One of these operators here is not like the other two. Both translation and modulation are unitary in the sense that they preserve the L2 norm of the function that they're acting on. But this D1 is funny. It doesn't preserve the L2 norm. What D1 preserves is the integral of G, and so somehow it doesn't fit. In the general scheme of time frequency analysis or time scale analysis, these operators being unitary is critical to the whole theory. Okay, so unitary representations of locally compact groups gives a large umbrella under which to study both Gabor methods and wavelet methods. And you can see with this representation, the Stockwell transform, the S transform, falls outside that framework. And so really this should be a different dilation. You might want to change this to a dilation which preserves the L2 norm, but that would violate what Robert described as the central principle of the S transform. So, which is that if you integrate the S transform of S over time, you get back the Fourier transform. And so he cites that as a very appealing feature of this transform. And you can see if you just rewrite this integral, changing order of integration, that it hinges very much on the fact that this, inside the brackets, integrates to a constant, which depends again on the fact that this dilation preserves the L1 norm and not the L2 norm. So actually this so-called central principle of the S-transform insists that we have L1 norm here preserved. Okay, well, I said I want to relate this to wavelet transforms. So if we're going to use wavelet transforms, we have only two operators, translation and dilation. We have to get rid of this modulation. But there's a very easy sort of algebraic fact that you can write these three operators in a different way as a multiplication, the scalar times translation, dilation, and then a constant modulation. So you can rewrite the S transform as S integrated against just a translation and a dilation of G tilde, which is G just multiplied by this modulating, constant modulating factor. Okay, well, so this looks like a wavelet now because we have translation and dilation, but it suggests something strange, which is L1 wavelets. This dilation doesn't respect the L2 norm, it respects the L1 norm. And with wavelets, there's so much that's been done on them, I wouldn't rule out that L1 wavelets have been studied somewhere, but I know nothing about that. So this doesn't fit the usual wavelet picture, and if anyone here is aware of an L1 wavelet theory, I would be interested to know. But that seems to be what this formulation of the S-transform calls for. Okay, so this is suggesting something unusual outside the normal framework. But we can actually fix this. So this is the proper L2 dilation, which is D2. If we want to express the S-transform in terms of this dilation, we just have to correct by this factor of square root of frequency on the outside. And if we just rewrite things this way, then we're back in, this is the way, the continuous wavelet transform that I had on the first page there. And this is now really, the S transform is realized as a wavelet multiplier. That is, you apply the continuous wavelet transform, and then you multiply by this function. So rescaling by square root of frequency, and then this modulating factor. Okay, so we've got a wavelet multiplier, and the mother wavelet is this modulated Gaussian. Okay, but here's the objection. This modulated Gaussian is not an admissible wavelet. Okay, so to really have a wavelet transform, you need an admissible wavelet, which requires that the wavelet be zero mean. Okay, so an admissible wavelet has to have zero mean. It has to integrate to zero, which is not true of this modulated Gaussian. Okay, so Robert actually said, well, this is not a wavelet because G is not is inadmissible, and strictly speaking, that's true. But there's a basic fact about admissible wavelets, which is absolutely any function under the sun is an admissible wavelet almost. So admissible wavelets are dense in the set of L2 functions. So if you take any function, you can always find some perturbation, some small perturbation of that function which makes it admissible. So in this particular case, if we take this modulated Gaussian, if you set epsilon to be the following function, epsilon is this negative of e to the minus 2 pi squared times g is the Gaussian. Then this represents a perturbation of the modulated mother wavelet G, and you get this wavelet H. And actually, it doesn't look like it. This looks like a sort of a reasonable number, but actually, this is tiny. So the L2 norm of epsilon is this big. Okay, so if you replace this inadmissible wavelet by H, this small perturbation of H, you're adding a function whose L2 norm is 0 to 8 decimal places. What that means is, in practical terms, you won't see any difference between using H and using G tilde if you apply this with real data. So a very small perturbation takes care of that. So effectively we have the following situation. We have the S transform is now a wavelet transform with a multiplier. So what's the significance of saying that the S transform is a wavelet transform followed by a multiplier in time scale space? Well, in principle, there's no significance to that because any operator can be represented as a wavelet multiplier. If you allow a multiplication in time scale space, in phase space, you can represent any operator. So this really doesn't say anything. What's important here is that this multiplier is very simple. And because of the simple structure of this multiplier, from a numerical point of view, if we want to go further and go from the continuous S-transform to a discretized S-transform, or further to the finite S-transform, we can use the theory of wavelet transforms and fast wavelet transforms and just follow this simple multiplier isn't going to create any numerical difficulties. So that's really the significance of this representation. It's not that there is a multiplier, it's that the multiplier is very simple. And I'll come back later to looking at what effect this really has. Okay, well here's just a quick illustration of what this is good for. Of course, this is very well known. The S transform you can invert because you can, if you take the S transform and you take the time average of it, you get the Fourier transform and you can apply the inverse Fourier transform. But that's not necessarily a good way to carry out the computation. And so here is the standard formula for, well, really a resolution of the identity. So we can represent this function as the inverse transform of its wavelet transform. So here's the wavelet transform of the function, and then we just integrate against all translates and rescalings of this mother wavelet function. Okay, well, if you just make the change of variables, frequency is 1 over scale, and you substitute into this, you get the inverse formula for the S transform. So it just follows directly from the wavelet transform. But you can do much more. Really, I would propose that you can fill in, one way to fill in these question marks here in the analysis of the S transform is simply use the wavelet transform and the fast wavelet transform. And your multiplier is invertible, so this actually doesn't create any difficulties necessarily. But there is one feature. When you're mapping frequency, so the relation is inverse frequency is scale, or if you think of this instead of frequency as being wave number, wavelength is scale, and that's a sort of very intuitive association between wavelength and scale. But whether you look at it as wavelength or whether you look at it as scale actually has an effect on what's a natural way to implement the finite transform. So for example, with the S transform, some of the implementations of this use linear sampling in frequency. With the wavelet transform, you use logarithmic sampling in scale. And if instead of logarithmic sampling in scale, you use inverse linear sampling, you get something strange and different. Okay, so although one has access to these wavelet methods by the relation between the two, actually the Stockwell transform suggests looking at different sampling regimens even in a wavelet context. So I think this is implementable, but one has to deal with this, and it kind of makes some suggestions going both ways here between these two. Okay, so that's relating the simple relation. I mean, all I've done is very, very elementary looking at the basic formulas. The simple relation between the S transform and the wavelet transform gives you access to a giant theory of wavelet methods if you really want to use the S transform. But there's another perspective. If we look at the S transform down here, it is unusual in the sense that we have both the operators of modulation and dilation in the same transform. And there's sort of two directions we can take which are suggested by this. So first of all, we had the D1 dilation. Here's a D2 dilation. One direction to go is to look at various dilations in place of this D2 or the other D1. Another direction is to look at, well, what other transforms can we generate by mixing modulation, translation, and dilation all together. So here the modulation and the dilation are linked. But that need not be the case. So we could imagine other directions. So just looking at this S transform, it kind of suggests two possible directions. So I want to explore those a little further. So in fact, people have studied these ideas already in the mathematical literature. So here is a parameterized family of transforms which were studied by Nazareth and Holschneider. And they weren't studying image processing. The purpose of studying this family of operators was really sort of generalizing to a certain extent some of the wave packet analysis of Cordoba and Pfefferman from the 1970s. And they're interested in analyzing operators from the mathematical point of view. But what's interesting is that if you look at this parameterized family of operators, so there's this parameter alpha, and alpha ranges from 0 to 1. Now, if alpha is 0, you get so this disappears, this rescaling disappears altogether, and you just get the short-time Fourier transform. If alpha is a half, you get the so-called FBI transform, which is actually very old. This is a sort of Gabor-type transform, which was studied in the mid-70s. It's Fourier, Broth, Jagelnitzer transform. And again, this was introduced in the study of pseudo-differential operators. This should be, if alpha is one, you get, so Nasr and Holschneider say you get a type of wavelet transform. Actually, what you get is the S transform, but scaled by frequency. The interesting thing about this paper is that this family of transforms is analyzed collectively, and approximate inverses are developed, again, in the context of analyzing pseudo-differential operators. But the S-transform in with this little multiplier arises as a special case. It's the extreme case. So here we have actually a continuum between short-time Fourier transform, Gabor analysis, and S-transform. Yes?
I think there's some of the modulation
here?
No, on the top of this.
There should be a modulation, I'm sorry.
And
yeah.
Alpha also appears in the modulation, or is the alpha only appearing in the modulation?
That's right. There's no alpha in the modulation. Okay.
Well, actually, we found that it's operated